Greetings and a warm welcome to the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry has called for investigations into possible crimes by Israeli military in response to the Great March of Return protests in Gaza. It says despite the civilian nature of the protests, Israeli snipers deployed across the separation fence shot more than 6,000 of the protesters. Now, the majority of the Palestinians were deliberately shot. UN Rights Chief has lamented Tel Aviv's, quote, immediate dismissal of the UN Human Rights Council report, which says that the Israeli military response to the protests could amount to crimes against humanity. Tel Aviv has called the report biased and false. Now, the question is, who can hold Israel accountable for its violations? Let's first watch this report from Gaza, and then we'll begin the debate.
According to figures provided by the Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza, Israeli forces have injured some 30,000 peaceful Palestinian protesters since March 30, 2018, who were taking part in the Great March of Return rallies. Hundreds of them became partially or completely disabled, while over 500 others are still in critical condition. The mass rallies were launched to demand the right of return for millions of Palestinian refugees and the complete lifting of the hermetic Israeli blockade.
I was peacefully protesting with my wife and kids, and it was my first time ever to be near the buffer zone. Snipers shot me with two explosive bullets.
I was only shouting slogans against the occupation when I was hit by an explosive bullet that shattered my leg. I'm badly injured, but I will not stop protesting.
On May 14, 2018, on the eve of the 70th anniversary of Nakba Day, which coincided with the U.S. Embassy relocation from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem al-Quds, Israeli forces killed over 60 demonstrators and wounded hundreds with live ammunition. Among them was Nihad Jibril, who was shot five times.
Israeli soldiers have been targeting all the innocent protesters, including women and children. We are unarmed and in no way posing any threat to the Israeli soldiers.
Since the beginning of the Great March of Return in late March 2018, Israeli soldiers killed scores of Gazan protesters and injured thousands. Rights groups have expressed grave concerns over Israel's use of lethal force against Palestinian civilians.
Since the Great March, the start of the Great March of Return, there has been a severe deterioration in the excessive use of force deployed against civilians. We see Israeli soldiers behind the sand dunes, behind vehicles and so on, and they are in no way subject to any security threat, even though they fire live ammunition against civilians.
Targeting civilians who exercise their right to peaceful assembly is a serious violation of the rules of international law, international humanitarian law, the ICC Rome Statute, and Fourth Geneva Convention.
Nearly a year after the launch of the Great March of Return rallies, thousands of injured protesters continue to suffer. They blame the international community for failing to protect their peaceful action. Ashraf Shanan, Press TV Gaza.
Now, with that report from our correspondent in Gaza, let's begin the debate. Joining me in this debate will be Maxine Dover, who is a journalist and political commentator, joining us from New York. And also we have Saad Nimr, a professor of political science with Berzait University, who is joining us out of Ramallah. Good to have you both with us. Let's begin with Maxine. The Great March of Return opposes the Israeli annexation and occupation of Palestinian land, which happened in 1948. More than 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homes in Palestine during what they call as the Nakba or Catastrophe Day. Now, isn't it natural for the Palestinians to ask for their land back? Why should peaceful protests be treated so brutally?
Good evening. It is understandable that there would be a search for return of either compensation or property. That would be understandable. That, of course, is a situation that exists on both sides of this conflict. The Jews who were expelled from Arab lands because of the creation of the State of Israel, more than 800,000 at the time. Those people have made new lives. They have made a new life in the State of Israel and are not protesting. the idea of the protest, if it is in fact to be a peaceful protest, to create a political demand, should be just that, should be a peaceful protest. What would be stopping the protest from existing 100 feet from the established border, the currently temporary, if we would, established border of Gaza? If it were 100 feet away, if there were no burning tires, if there were no balloons with explosives, there would probably be no casualties.
All right, let's go to Ramallah and ask Saad Nimr's opinion about the same.
Well, good evening, and good evening to your guest as well from New York. And I may ask, with these demonstrators who are very violent, how many Israeli soldiers and how many civilian Israeli were killed or injured during this whole year of these demonstrations? And this question is supposed to be also to Maxine as well, and as my counterpart. Mm-hmm. None, zero, nil. So stop saying that they are very close to the borders. They have the right to be on the borders. It's their borders. Okay, I can be on my fence, exactly at my fence, not on the other side. So why they should, kill them? Do you know that in the first day, which is the 30th of March last year, 68 Palestinians were killed in the same day. In the same day, 68. And we are talking here about snipers. The snipers, they can distinguish between people. They know exactly who they are targeting. When they are targeting Razan Najjar, she's the Palestinian nurse who was, wearing her white coat and with all the marks of the Red Crescent on it, quite clearly that she's a medic, and she was targeted and killed. When they killed two Palestinian journalists who were having vests saying on it press, and yet they were marked quite clearly and they were targeted by the snipers. I think this is worth not only a war crime in the report, but also crime against humanity.
That's what the UN report is saying, yeah, both crimes against humanity and war crimes. Now, Maxine, this is Tel Aviv's reaction to the UN report. I'm quoting the Tel Aviv government directly. They say this report is hostile, false, and biased. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also said the report reflects the Rights Council's obsessive hatred of Israel. Now, this is how Israel responds to the world body. Who can hold Tel Aviv accountable for its crimes and all sorts of violations?
Well, I think the most essential one who holds Tel Aviv accountable is Tel Aviv. Every soldier's action is very well documented and is very well researched by the army. The army has extraordinary standards, and the Army of Israel is well known to be subject to military law and very strongly enforced military law by the government of Israel.
But so why should they take so many people's lives when they're doing their peaceful protest? That's what the UN is saying in our reports on the ground.
Look, the reality of this protest is that it's not peaceful. We all know that. We know that children are being taken to the front lines of this protest. We know that people are charging the fence. There's movie, there's video, there's a large amount of evidence that this is not a peaceful protest. There were thousands of acres, and acres I'm not equating land to people at all, but there were thousands of acres burned by explosives and incendiary bombs sent by balloon. There were a child killed in his own backyard. So the idea that this violence is being kept away from the citizens of Israel is exactly the responsibility of an army. A country's army is to protect its citizens. And if there is a threat to those citizens, the army has to react.
Okay, Saad, what's your response to that?
Well, I think, you know, you can always talk about reality or something near reality. It's fine if you want to defend, you know, Israel. Those who are sending the balloons, yes, we admit that there were kites and balloons, right? But the Israelis are targeting them by the F-16s, thank to you, America, F-16 to target these people. I'm talking about the demonstrators in front of the line. Who were targeted by the snipers. Those people, why they were killed, why children on the ground were killed, not sending balloons or kites, because those who were sending balloons or kites usually at the behind of the demonstration, and usually they are targeted by aeroplanes and even by artillery. So it's quite clear, and usually they use kind of methods in the afternoon. Now, I'm talking about the demonstrators who are exactly in front of the line, who were killed, though they were not threatening any of the soldiers. And again, you didn't answer my question. How many soldiers were killed or injured in the whole process? I can tell you that there were 241 Palestinians were killed. More than 30 of them were children, 5 women, plus 3 medics and 2 journalists, plus 2 handicaps on their chair.
Yep.
A guy on a wheelchair like Thaer, who was killed. Mm-hmm. How that happened? Why the sniper would kill someone on a wheelchair with no legs? Mm-hmm. Is that a threat to Israel? Is that threatening the soldiers? That's why they are immoral army. And don't give me this absolute rubbish about the Israeli army is a moral army. How many soldiers were taken to court ever for whatever they are doing to the Palestinians? Please look at B'Tselem, which is an Israeli organization for human rights, and look at the reports regarding how many soldiers were even investigated or taken responsibility for killing Palestinians in cold blood.
Okay, Maxine, the main theme.
Well, in many ways, you're making the case. These are.
Yes, go ahead. Have your reaction first.
Because a soldier who acts incorrectly is immediately investigated, is many times placed in jail, is many times prosecuted as someone who does an illegal and, of course, an immoral action.
Name one act that no
other army takes.
Saad wants one example, one simple example.
Give me only one example of the last 1 year.
I don't have the example. I can.
So then don't tell me they are going to court.
Don't
tell me they are investigated. They were decorated by Netanyahu. They were decorated by Netanyahu, not investigated.
Okay, well, let's go to Maxine.
No, that's not correct. The army investigates any action that is not within normal and allowed military bounds.
Okay, let's go to other aspects of the story. Now, Maxine, the main theme of the speech by UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet was gross inequalities in the world. Gross inequalities. Is her concern substantiated? What can be done to tackle this issue?
If her concerns are substantiated, and she used the words apparent and other conditional words throughout her speech, perhaps it is time for Hamas to review what it is demanding of the citizens of Gaza, of the people of Gaza, and to not suddenly reinstitute balloon attacks after approximately a 2-month ceasefire. Perhaps it is time for Hamas to wonder whether or not putting children in the front lines is a proper political policy, or whether it is time to, in fact, sit down with the counterparts to better the lives of the people of Gaza rather than encourage them to run against the security fence.
Yeah, but that wasn't the answer to my question. Anyway, well, let's go to Ramallah. Saad, more than 75% of the people living in Gaza are either refugees or descendants of refugees as a result of the Nakba. Now, there are protests have also been recognized under the UN General Assembly resolutions 194 and 3236. Of course, Israel has disregarded them. Now, what can be done so that the lives of Palestinian protesters could be protected?
Well, the whole issue of the Palestinian refugees is quite clear in front of the international law, and especially that in the last year we have witnessed the Americans on the one side with the Trump administration, as well as the Israeli. They tried to disqualify the UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Work Agency, which is taking care of the services of the Palestinians. We are talking about around 60% of the total Palestinian people are refugees because of what happened in 1948. This was an ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian land in 1948-47 by the Israeli government, which was also involved in massacres against the Palestinians. It drove them out, and sometimes literally they were drove out. Now, for the last 71 years, who is going to pay? Who is going to take care of these Palestinians who lost everything and lived miserably in refugee camps, 58 refugee camps all around the region, including West Bank, Gaza, and Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon? Who is going to pay for their suffering, not let alone
the question
to
arises.
Pay for their loss and their land?
Okay, Maxine?
They were kicked out.
But the question arises, why these people remain in the refugee status? A refugee is a generation that leaves its original home. A refugee's children should it be at the point of establishing lives, just as the Jewish refugees from Arab countries who came to Israel with nothing, who lived in tents, the same kind of tent camps and worse than any other refugee. And within a generation, their children had established lives. They had homes, they had jobs, they were part of Israeli society. Why is this attempt to keep children and children's children in the status of refugee continuing? It's an immoral act on the part of the UN. It's a political act on the part of a government that doesn't have the real concerns of people at its forefront.
Okay, let's listen to Saad Nimr's idea about this.
Please, Maxine, don't you ever do the same kind of comparison between the Jewish situation and the Palestinian situation. This is totally different, because the Jews, till today, they are still milking the German and making them feel guilty, right? I'm not talking about that. I'm not going to go into this comparison. If I am a son of the third son of a refugee,
the biggest
myself,
young population, the biggest young Jewish population
minute,
in Europe
wait
is
minute,
in Berlin.
Wait a minute, don't interrupt me. Why should I pay for
my apology.
You taking my land, my father's land, my grandfather's land? If I was still there, I still enjoy my prosperity in my own land. Now you took it and you make my father and my grandfather refugee. What do you want to call me? To call me a lord? Definitely I am a refugee, because you took everything for me. My heritage, you took it from me. You took my homes, my houses, my land, my trees, my groves, my factories, my everything, you took it. And then you don't want me to say that I'm a refugee? This is absolutely unbelievable.
Okay.
Right? So please,
okay.
Ian, don't
now
go
let's,
there.
Let's get
it's
back to the main topic.
Right
we are
to go back according to the international
okay.
law.
Okay, Saad, we're running out of time. Let's go back to the main topic. I got a question for Maxine. Maxine, this UN report mentions clear, and I'm stressing clear, it's not conditional, like you said, like the words like apparent that was used. It says clear case of war crimes when Israeli soldiers deliberately, again the word deliberately, targeted groups that are protected under international law. And Saad mentioned them, such as children, disabled people, journalists, medical personnel. You know, a couple of journalists as well as two or three health workers were all shot dead by Israeli snipers. Why are these people targeted?
This needs to be investigated, why they were targeted, if they were in fact in their role as journalists. I, as a journalist, empathize with the need to be on the front line, and certainly that should be investigated. And I believe that that will be investigated, and if there is punishment to be meted out, it will be done. What are children doing on the front lines of a protest? That's the fault of Hamas. The children should not be there. And that is not something that soldier needs to be responsible for.
Well, you went back to the previous question.
A child gets okay. in the middle of a crowd, and I've been in crowds, a child mm-hmm. does not mm. belong in the middle of a crowd, especially when it's not a peaceful protest.
Okay,
I get only
1 minute left.
On Friday afternoons in Gaza.
Okay, one last question. Saad, you have only 30 seconds. Gaza, some people look at it as an open-air prison, the largest open-air prison on planet Earth. Israeli siege has paralyzed people's lives. You know, hospitals, infrastructure, hygiene, sanitation, everything's crumbling. So many power cuts, water shortages, and you name it. Who's supposed to compensate for all this misery? 30 seconds, please.
Well, first of all, the siege should be lifted. If the siege is lifted, then there will be, you know, everything will be normal in Gaza. Gaza used to be one of a good Palestinian, even support to the economy of Palestine. They produce a lot, and they have people who are working, and they can live normal life. But what was going on, that the siege, which is surrounding Gaza and preventing everything, definitely had ruined everything for Gaza.
Okay.
Even equipments for water to be dissolved and get clean water, they are not allowing it. So that's the misery of the siege.
All right. On that note, we come to the end of this debate. Let me thank our guests. We had Max Andover, journalist and political commentator from New York, and also Saad Nim, professor of political science from Versailles University, who joined us from Ramallah. And thank you, viewers, for watching this debate. We'll see you soon.